You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast for the week of February 19th to February 25th, the 8th week of the year. My name is Baruch. I'm an alcoholic, and I will be your host. So we start this week at Genesis 32:4, which is a moment at which Jacob has left Laban after many years of working for Laban and being cheated by him and mistreated by Laban, and he goes to confront Esau. And Genesis 32:4 said, "Then Jacob sent angels ahead of him to Esau." He knows that Esau is coming for him with an army of 400 men. So he's obviously very frightened, and I think that as alcoholics, we might be able to relate to this sort of moment. It's the moment when we're going to confront people from our past who may not like us. In fact, maybe we can even relate to Jacob's actual situation, which is Esau said, basically, if I ever see you again, I'm going to kill you. But he has to confront Esau. He can't continue with his life and his life's purpose without dealing with Esau. So he prepares for the attack in three different ways. He prays. He prays for help. He forms an actual defense plan, and he sends gifts to his brother. He does not rely on just one approach to saving himself. This is a good idea in program terms. We want to work on recovery on multiple fronts to assure that our sobriety will not be compromised if we fail in any one area. So, for example, you might spend some of your time in recovery efforts on prayer, some in doing step work and working with others, and then also making amends. So you do different things. If you fail in one of those processes, you have a good program still going on. Because, you know, sometimes things don't go the way you think they're going to go. You know, you want to make amends to someone and it doesn't go right, so you want to be doing the other work at the same time so that you don't get caught in a tailspin. Now, in Genesis 32:25 says, "Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him until the break of dawn." So Jacob has sent his family ahead of him in different groups. He sends them in multiple groups in case one group gets attacked, the other group will be safe. And he stays behind, and overnight he gets attacked. And this is a really kind of a puzzling little moment in the Bible, because it's really not at all clear what's going on, although the interpretation is that the man who attacked him, it's actually an angel, it's the angel of Esau, and he sort of wrestles with this angel all night, and in the end Jacob wins the fight, which is a sort of predicts that Jacob will prevail over Esau in the long term. And I think as an addict or alcoholic, this we should be able to relate to this idea of struggling all night with a powerful adversary that we don't really know and we don't understand and is attacking us without any particular reason. I think that describes certainly a few nights in my life, maybe not literally fighting with somebody, but certainly struggling with an adversary, with something, a struggle within myself for sure. A terrible fight that I didn't really understand. And Jacob gets injured in the struggle, but he survives. And, you know, we too have been injured in our lengthy struggles with addiction, but we can go on. We can live full lives. And the struggle between Jacob and the angel can inspire us to believe that things will be okay for us if we pray and do the footwork, do the basic work. The promise is fulfilled when we see that Esau embraces Jacob instead of killing him. This comes up in Genesis 33:4. This is the next kind of scene, if you will. You know, Jacob's plan basically works. Esau doesn't kill him, and in fact hugs him and says, you know, I missed you. And for recovery purposes, we can view this event as an example of letting go of a lifelong resentment. But of course, this story is more complicated than that, but we should still be impressed by Esau's ability to embrace the brother he had sworn to kill for so many years. In our own lives and recovery processes, we might also benefit from this idea, releasing ourselves from the bondage of resentments and embracing our brothers. It can only improve our serenity if we do it with sincerity and God's help. After Jacob's meeting up with Esau and getting through that and having it be the result not in him being killed but in being embraced, he goes, the Torah, the Bible tells us that Jacob goes and settles in a place called Shechem, a city called Shechem. You know, Jacob's been through a lot, but one of the first things that happens when he gets there is his daughter, Dinah, Jacob had a daughter named Dinah, who was born from Leah, is abducted by the prince of Shechem. And you have to think, in those days, each sort of city was like a city-state, so it was like a king of that area, the king of Shechem and the prince of Shechem. So in Genesis 34:1 it says, "Now Dinah, the daughter of Leah, whom she had borne to Jacob, went out to look over the daughters of the land. Shechem, son of Hamor the Hivite, the prince of the region, saw her. He took her, lay with her, and violated her. He became deeply attached to Dinah, daughter of Jacob. He loved the maiden and appealed to the maiden's emotions. So Shechem spoke to Hamor, his father, saying, 'Take me this girl for a wife.'" So what we have here is a rape. Shechem rapes Dinah, but in the custom of the times, he intended this as a way to marry her, strange as that might sound. And obviously it's a very disturbing incident on a lot of levels. But it's something that happens to Jacob's family, and it's a reminder of an expression that I like to use, and I've heard a lot in the rooms, which is that life is in session. Life can deal many bad blows to even the best of people without warning. And recovery, we have to be prepared for the fact that life is in session. We need to understand that nothing can stand between us and recovery. We need to be prepared for life in session. So in this story, we could probably imagine ourselves as any one of the main characters, and there is a lesson in each for recovery. Perhaps we've been Dinah, an innocent who is violated and needs to work on healing. Or maybe we've acted like Shechem and violated another person, sexually, emotionally, financially, and need to seek forgiveness for our actions. Unfortunately, a lot of us have done things like this, and we need and a guilt and shame we feel drives us to drink and use, and we need to find forgiveness in some way, at least maybe to forgive ourselves. Finally, we may be like Jacob or Leah, who survives decades of mistreatment under Laban, faces potential death at the hands of Esau, and then finally, when he's finally free, he's immediately hit with this terrible tragedy. Wow, what can we do about it? So in recovery, the answer is there may be to do a lot or to do a little or do nothing. Sometimes you don't have to do anything, and that's we'll explore that in a minute. The answer will come if we pray to God and ask for help in understanding life on life's terms. What happens after this is that two of Jacob's sons, Simeon, and Levi, go and lead an attack on Shechem. Basically, what they do is they pretend to agree to the terms. They say, "Oh, you can marry our sister, but first you have to become circumcised in the way of the Jews, and all the people in your kingdom, all the men, have to become circumcised." So they make Shechem, the king, and his son, and all the men of this area get circumcised. So when these men are recovering from this extremely painful procedure, Shimon and Simeon and Levi attack and kill everybody. I mean, what the Bible says, the commentary says, is Simeon and Levi, who were really just boys at this point, were like superhumanly strong. They were able to like overpower hundreds of adult men and kill them all. They were fierce warriors. Now, what happened though is that they didn't ask Jacob, their father, about this plan. They just went ahead and did it. And there's a problem. Jacob is obviously upset. I mean, he's upset that his daughter has been abducted and raped. He's upset to be in this situation, and now he's even more upset that his sons have taken action, such violent action, without asking him for his advice first. So in Genesis 34:30, it says, Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You have discomposed me, making me odious among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanite and among the Perizzite. I am few in number, and should they band together and attack me, I will be annihilated, I and my household." Okay. So there's an idea here that we really should explore. So both the father and the son believed they were doing the right thing, except they had a different idea of what should be done. The father, it's not really clear what he wanted to do, but he certainly wasn't planning an attack. And the sons went off and attacked without asking their father. Now, it's worth noting that Jacob wasn't any old father. He was one of the wisest men who ever lived. So the boys, Simeon and Levi, had access to a tremendously wise advisor, but they chose not to seek his advice. This is alcoholic behavior, and I think we've all probably been in this kind of situation where there's someone around us, maybe it's a sponsor or some other mentor figure, who we could have asked for advice, but we didn't, maybe because we knew they would tell us not to do what we were planning to do. We wanted to do it anyway. And of course, what they did, somehow this plan they had worked, but it could easily have not worked. And that's what Jacob was saying. And you have to realize, too, that Jacob was commanded by God to live in this general part of the world. You know, he was getting to the land of Israel. This is where he was supposed to be. So he wanted to be on good terms with the people who lived there, and he was worried that he would get driven out. So I think the lesson for this is that we should try not to act like these two sons. We should try to seek advice from wiser and more experienced people in the program before we do anything that's important. Now, Simeon and Levi have a response to their father in 34:31. They say, Genesis 34:31 says, "And they said, 'Should he treat our sister like a harlot?'" He being Hamor. I think a harlot is a prostitute. The boys are saying, this is wrong. This man should not be able to treat our sister like a prostitute and take advantage of her like this. And of course, they have a very good point. But in recovery terms, it's one of those classic things, which is there's the normal way people deal with problems in life, and then there's the way you need to deal with them in recovery. And normally, an attack like this should provoke a counterattack. But sometimes, as we've learned in recovery, the counterattack isn't worth it in emotional terms for us. And what's interesting is that when they say this to Jacob, and you have to realize this tremendous nerve these boys have, or in Yiddish we'd say chutzpah, you know, to talk to their father this way. Again, they're not talking to any old father. This is the father. Jacob is really the father of the Israelite nation, and you know, was a tremendous prophet and a scholar and a wise man. And they're mouthing off to him in a very inappropriate way. And in response, Jacob says nothing. He is silent. You know, many years later on his deathbed, Jacob curses them for what they did. But it's very instructive that Jacob was able to remain silent in the face of this galling question from his sons. I think most of us would not let our children get away with saying something so rude to us, but we're not Jacob, right? Jacob can teach us a lesson in humility and spiritual wellness that we can use in our programs. Regardless of the merit of their intent, the son's question is a manipulative, baiting remark. It's the kind of remark that we alcoholics sometimes make. Jacob doesn't take the bait. And maybe we could learn to emulate him in many situations. And it reminds me of a saying that we have in Al-Anon, which is, don't just do something, sit there. Right? Sometimes the wisest course of action is to sit back. As counterintuitive as it might seem, sometimes that's the way to stay healthy and stay sober. Now, in Genesis 35:1, God said to Jacob, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there." So God is telling Jacob to move to a different place, Bethel. There was a famous Torah commentator named Rashi, who lived in 10th century France, who was really the authoritative commentator on almost all the Torah and other books in the Hebrew tradition. So he had a comment. His interpretations are often used as the sort of standard interpretation of what the text means. So Rashi said that the tragedy of Dinah came upon Jacob because he did not fulfill his original vow to return to Bethel and make an altar there as soon as it was possible for him to do so. Instead, he went to Shechem. So this is obviously some backstory. Jacob was supposed to go to Bethel and make an altar to God. According to Rashi, God's protecting presence left Jacob when he failed to return promptly to the promised land. And the tragedy of Dinah occurred because God's protection had been lifted for that time. So this is an interpretation, obviously. This is off the text, but this is what one of the authoritative commentators says about this, that God's protection of Jacob and his family had sort of lifted, like a shield had been lifted, and he was vulnerable to this attack. So from perspective of recovery, the story can tell us something about the danger that we face if we delay taking action. Jacob was promised to do something, and he didn't. And it's not clear why, but he went to Shechem. Maybe he didn't feel ready to go to Bethel yet, make an altar. But good recovery has a lot to do with taking action, the right action, we hope, directly, without waiting. Waiting can enable our powers of rationalization to kick in. It's a setup for the addict mind to take over and push us away from doing the right thing. You know, addiction recovery doesn't do well with "I'll do this tomorrow." It does a lot better with "I'll do something now," or "I'll do it when I say I'm going to do it and not wait." Now, Rachel, who was Jacob's wife, one of Jacob's wives, this younger sister of Leah, she died. She died in childbirth, giving birth to Benjamin, the youngest son. Binyamin in Hebrew. In Genesis 35:19, it says, "Thus Rachel died and was buried on the road to Ephrath." Rachel's tomb, and I believe it is, you can still see it today in Israel. Rachel's tomb is next to a road. And what's a little bit odd about this is, you know, usually the Leah and Jacob are buried in Hebron, in the cave of Machpelah, which is where the matriarchs and patriarchs were buried. But Rachel was buried next to a road. Now, it's not just any road. It's the road where many years later, many centuries later, when the Israelites were taken into captivity by the Babylonians. After the Babylonians destroyed the temple in Jerusalem, they took the Israelites into exile, the Babylonian exile. They took them down this road, and they all walked past Rachel's tomb. So you can imagine how they felt. They're being thrown out of their land. Their precious holy temple had been destroyed, and on their way out, they saw the tomb of Rachel, their great matriarch ancestor. But the prophet Jeremiah gives an explanation of this. See, Jacob himself was a talented prophet. He foresaw the tragedy that would befall the Jewish people and the Babylonian exile. He could see what was coming, and so he decided to bury Rachel there on the next to the road. He planned ahead. He wanted the Jewish people to be comforted on their way into exile by saying, "Here is the tomb of your great mother. It is to remind you that you will come back here and you should be comforted even though you're going into exile." And what this makes me, what this reminds me of is how when you come to an AA meeting for the first time, you walk into a room and there's people there, usually you've been sober for 5, 10, 20 years, more, you know, really experienced old-timers. And it reminds me a little bit of this idea of Rachel being buried by the road, which is that it's like these people were, I mean, they're there for their own reasons, obviously, but for the point of view of the newcomer or people who are struggling in addiction and recovery, it's like they're placed there for your comfort in advance, in a way. That's the way I think of it. It's like the program is there. It's like Rachel's tomb. It's there to comfort you. It was placed there. There was great foresight in it, in a way, that, you know, it's there to comfort you on your journey in recovery, especially early on. And so we can take this maybe as a little bit of a direction to ourselves, that if we can work a program, we can be present ourselves for a newcomer, like Rachel's tomb, ready for the person who's on the road to recovery.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com